now, John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Michael Bloomberg. Sponsored by the Heart Institute of Staten Island. Don't let your heart skip a beat.
Yes, indeed. Johnny Donovan, thank you very much. Hello, everybody. It is a Friday here on the John Gambling Show, and that means Mayor Michael Bloomberg is indeed here. Mr.
And
Mayor, good morning.
I am bringing good weather.
You
less
have done
humidity,
it again.
A little bit of sun, a little bit of clouds. Nice temperatures, low 80s.
Beaches will be crowded.
This is going to be perfect. It's going to be a great weekend. And just be careful on the beaches and in the pools. Same thing.
Absolutely. So, unusual week. Tough week with the explosion, the steam pipe that let go up.
Yeah, very 41st. Tragic. A person killed.
A couple seriously injured.
Yeah. You know, you're walking along and all of a sudden something happens and... when you least expect it. I suppose if there is good news, it is that it was not terrorism. We are trying to clean up as quickly as possible. But the first thing to pay attention to is safety. We've tested the air and many times, and there's no asbestos in the air. There is trace amounts on something like we took 76 different samples and 20-ish had asbestos, but 18 out of the 20-ish were trace amounts. The two where it was real asbestos probably was a piece of asbestos from – they used to use asbestos to cover the pipes,
right.
To wrap the pipes, sure. Mm-hmm. But we are going to make sure that we, for our employees, insist that they follow OSHA's recommendations on masks and that sort of thing, and for the contractors, suggest that they do.
What's the story with the people that work in that neighborhood?
Nobody lives in the neighborhood.
Okay.
There's
all,
no residential buildings within this. We've checked very carefully. No residential buildings. That's good news. Stores and offices, you can't get in if it's a frozen zone. Now, Third Avenue is now all cleaned up. By Monday, I expect 42nd Street and some of the other streets. Lexington's going to carry well into next week, and there are a couple blocks where people really are getting hurt, small businesses, offices. You got to be safe no matter what the costs are. And then you can see how you get compensated if you can. Con Ed obviously will do something. How much, I've got to leave it up to them for the moment. Subways and the trains are now fully working, so that's not a problem.
So Grand Central and the shuttle.
Grand Central's
and
open.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure the shuttle's open too. So that's that all works. It's a traffic headache. And I think, let's put it in perspective, the traffic is nothing compared to the fact that we lost a life.
Absolutely.
And a couple of other people who knows how it will come out.
Has Con Ed had any explanation as to why?
No, they're still doing a study. The pipe was installed in 1924, which is not particularly old, believe it or not, for this kind of infrastructure. There was a blast about 20 years ago. I remember a pipe really broke, exploded. Everybody's writing these articles saying it's dangerous, there's danger under the streets. Yes, I mean, we live in a concentrated society with a lot of things going on. When you see these maps in the papers of everything that's underground, it really is.
Ever seen a cross-section of
sure.
underneath
I mean,
New
there
York,
are old
amazing.
Tunnels, nobody, not in anybody's map. I mean, one of the problems is people say, well, let's potholes, when the road starts sagging a little bit and the asphalt obviously was dug up for some reason or other and put back and not as good a job as you'd like, it's very difficult to track who did it. In the case of side streets, there are a lot of contractors who without licenses do it. You go after them, but the real world is there's an awful lot of stuff underground that constantly needs to be repaired, and that's why you dig it up and put it back. Some stuff underground that nobody has any records of. They just didn't keep records 50, 100 years ago. And how you go map it is really a difficult thing to do. But, again, given all of the infrastructure that's there, percentage-wise, it's in great shape. Not very comforting, however, if you happen to be at 41st in Lexington the other night. Sure.
One of the very telling pictures of this tragedy the other day was the picture, I believe it was in the Daily News, of all of the shoes, most of them female, from the people that were in the area that took off, obviously, as anybody would do, and started to run. My point is, though, the fact that you it was just a very emotional picture to see that.
Yeah,
considering
I think
where we are today.
You have to recognize that we live in a world particularly in this city, post 9/11, that people will fear the worst, or some people will fear the worst. And I suppose that's, you know, if they run, is that good or bad? Well, if they hurt themselves, it's not good. On the other hand, getting out of the way probably makes some sense. And as a practical aspect, the fact that we can comfort them afterwards is better than not being able to comfort them. But it's natural that people would, given the history of what happened 6 years ago here, really.
Yeah, I didn't mean to imply anything other than it was an emotional picture to see the shoes and to see part of what happened there for those of us that weren't there, fortunately, and the others that had to deal with it. Let's see here. Why don't we take a break here? When we come back, we got a couple of people who are going to join us here in the studio.
Great.
We'll talk about labor. We'll do it in just a moment here at 77 WABC.
77 WABC.
We continue here on the John Gambling Show Friday Get Together. Mayor Michael Bloomberg and a couple of, one staff member and one member of the fire department.
Do you know what the UFOA stands for?
Not a clue.
You should, because they keep us safe every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's the Uniform Fire Officers Association, and it's the union. They have one union for all of the officers. And there's one union for the firefighters themselves, the UFA, that differs from the police department, where the above the rank of officer, they have a separate union for sergeants and a separate union for lieutenants and captains. But all of the firefighter officers are together in the UFOA, and we have President Jack McDonnell here with us, who is new on the job. He's got 6 weeks on the job, about. And we are here to announce a new labor contract with him. And we have our commissioner for the Department of Labor Relations, Jim Hanley, with us as well.
Gentlemen, welcome aboard. Glad to have you here. I am assuming that there is good news to announce. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. I don't think you're going to negotiate in Studio 17.
I will tell you, you can ask Jack whether he likes the contract. I guess he does. We have a new collective bargaining agreement, which now goes to his members for our approval. And it covers 48 months from March 07, from just a couple months ago, going through March 2011, which is long after history, and includes an increase of total compensation of over 20% and a wage increase of nearly 17%. It is consistent with the pattern set by the Sergeants Benevolent Association. Remember, we announced that 2 weeks ago. Last week, the sanitation workers. But this is a good deal for everyone. Jack's got 2,400 members, lieutenants and captains and battalion chiefs and deputy chiefs and fire medical officers and supervising fire marshal. These guys and women do a phenomenal job. It's the management of the fire department. They're the ones that make the tough decisions. You go in or don't go in. You go here, you do this, you do this. You know, they make decisions that the lives of not just the firefighters and their own, but your life and my life are dependent on. And I think this shows that if you sit down and negotiate, and Jim's done this, you continually talk to unions and to Jack's predecessor, Peter Gorman, who was the president of the union for as long as I've been in office. And I really just got started to get to know Jack. But these guys do a great job, and this is a good contract for them. And I hope their members will see it that way and approve it. Jack certainly thinks so. Is that right? I guess so.
Yes, we do. We think we've reached a fair and a very rewarding settlement with the Office of Labor Relations. I think, as the mayor had just mentioned, we represent a multitude of ranks within our organization. So there were sometimes the great difficulty is trying to appease each rank. And as Commissioner Hanley will tell you, the last round of bargaining was very difficult, and there were quite a few concessions that were given up by all unions, and at this particular time, we were capable of buying back, if you will, some of that pain that we had to endure then.
Well, that makes everybody happy. How does the climate change for you, Jim, when it comes to sitting across the table from somebody like Jack?
Well, Jack had been the president once before, so it's not we certainly know one another for some period of time.
You've been the labor commissioner for how long?
I've been a labor commissioner now since, about a little less than 20 years, I guess.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
You would think with 8.3 million people in this city, Never mind. I'm happy to have you.
I think Casey Stengel.
You actually have done a spectacular job. I don't want it to go to your head, but
you have. That is such a good thing, though, because you have that perspective of 20 years of doing this to bring to
the table. Some people like that and some don't.
That's absolutely right, Mr. Mayor. Actually, I've been in the office negotiating contracts, not as the commissioner, but as various levels for 35 years. So I've been in the office a long time. But if people sit down and roll up their sleeves and men and women of good faith try to sit down and try to negotiate their contract, good things can occur. And I think that's exactly what happened here. And people worked pretty hard and kept it nice and quiet and got it done. And I'm glad we did.
So the natural thing is people all want to make more money so that they can enjoy the best things in life. Perfectly natural. The city wants its employees to be happy employees, that those are the people who work hard and flexible and show up and do all the good things. Any organization wants its employees happy. But the reality also is you only have so much money. If you're a company, you're spending the shareholders' profits when you pay your labor more. In the case of the city, we're spending the taxpayers' money, and it's finding that balance. And I think, as Jack will tell you, given his experiences, you negotiate, and you don't get everything you want, and you don't lose everything you want. That's what a good negotiation is.
Is the four-year agreement normal? Is that a usual? It seems long.
It's pretty long. It has happened and does happen, but this is actually one of the longest ones we've ever had with the UFOA.
And will that, do you think, or would you like that to become something that is more normal?
Oh, absolutely.
The longer
absolutely.
It is, the better for the city, and I would think...
Well, it's good and bad. You're committing yourself to an obligation down the road, and let's say you have a union that doesn't today say, I want to extend the contract out, they are running a risk. Now, we've always had pattern bargaining, but if the city got in real trouble, it would be obligated to satisfy those contracts it already had, but it wouldn't, in theory, be obligated to... give the same deal to others. Well, in practical sense, you probably would, but you could be a lot. These deals all have lots of give and take, so there's flexibility needed. And if the city wasn't flexible down the road, a union runs the risk of missing, or they run the risk of getting the city even more flexible. What it also does for the city, though, is it gives you specificity. Because if you're trying to budget for the future, our biggest expense is labor. How do you put in a number if you don't know what it's going to be? If there's no contracts, you put in a high number, a reasonable number, a number you think is reasonable, that's where the negotiations start, and it goes, it gets more expensive from there, so you can't do that. On the other hand, if you don't put in any increase, that's unrealistic, and your financial statements really aren't realistic, and your planning can't be realistic. What this does is, because everybody sort of goes together in the pattern, in a general sense, it does let the city budget down the road. We'll at least know what our obligations are. Will they be higher than they would have otherwise been if we had waited? Nobody knows.
So, Jim, you have contracts with all the unions except one?
Well, there's different times and different time frames. We are settling a new round now, and this is the beginning of yet a new round.
So you always have work.
There's always a number of contracts that are outstanding, sure.
But you still have the PBA. That is in process.
I don't want to talk about ongoing negotiations. Even if you publicly or privately say we're never going to talk to those SOBs, you continue to talk. The city has 300,000 employees, and the employer-employee relationships are never cast in stone, and they always require interpretation and people of good faith working. So, Jim talks to Jack all the time. They're all issues. They're not the biggest issues that make the papers, but they do. And we'll see. I think the lesson of this contract and the sergeants and the sanitation is that if you work together, you can get a good contract that's fair to the city and fair to the employees. And yes, it's true that the general outline will be the same for everybody because of the pattern, although there are sometimes some unions don't believe that. But we've done it for 100 plus years, so it probably would be. But there's a lot of flexibility you need to tailor the agreement to the specific union. And for example, Jack, as he pointed out, represents all these different levels. They all have different needs. And how does he get a deal that satisfies most of them? You want to?
How do you do that? I mean, how do you? You obviously get input from your members.
We get a lot of input, and we have a negotiating committee we bring together to voice their opinions, and it's usually representative of all the ranks that we have. Obviously, it's a small committee, maybe 30, 35 people. But as you said a moment ago, every union has its individual needs that are unique to that organization. And in this particular case, as we said before, there's a multitude of ranks. But on the other hand, as we talked about a longer contract span, it gives the opportunity for me and the people I represent to look forward to plan for needs that we have at this particular time. And in this contract negotiations, Commissioner Hanley, I'm sure, will agree with me, we were able to address issues that might not have been able to been addressed in a two-year contract.
There you go. I think it makes a whole lot of sense. Before I have to let you go here in the half hour, do you know offhand how many different union contracts the city has?
Sure, well over 100.
Over 100. Yeah, yeah, like, as I say, it keeps you and your staff.
The diversity of the people that work for the city, we have fire officers who have enormous training and have put their lives at risk and very smart, very technical skills, the ultra-modern science, staying as Okurun. I think you saw some of that incidentally response yesterday. We can talk about the pipe again. But we have blacksmiths.
We have carriage upholsterers that are in a union. We have horseshoers that are in a union. We have chaplains that are in a union.
How about that? Interesting stuff. This is a big city, and it's a big conglomerate of individuals and to run it. Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming by here. Mr. Mayor, stay where you are.
We made
it around to the half hour here at 77 WABC. More with Mayor Michael Bloomberg in just a moment. 77 WABC. John Gambling here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. We've got to get to the theater of congestion pricing and negotiating with Albany. How do you feel about where we are now with the committee? And I guess the application was made yesterday. Is that correct, to Washington?
Well, it's not quite – nothing simple, particularly when you deal with Albany and the legislatures. But in all fairness, the Senate and the Assembly and the governor have state business that they are talking about at the same time. The city is involved because of something where we need permission so that, you know – they're all being talked about at the same time, and they all sort of get done at the same time. Even so, there's many stories going on, and many battles and negotiations at the same time, and it's fascinating trying to keep track of what each conversation's about, and they tend to jump from one to another. But let me talk about congestion pricing. We came to an agreement which isn't everything you want, but that's what negotiations always are. The agreement is that this coming week the Assembly and the Senate will come back to Albany and will pass the bill that was drafted that everybody agreed to, which sets up a commission that includes the city and the mayor's office and the city council, includes the minority and majority caucuses in both the Assembly and the Senate and the governor, and there's 17 members total, and they're authorized to study congestion in the city and to make recommendations, and then the Senate and the Assembly would have to vote by March 31st is the agreement. We have submitted a plan a long time ago, 2 weeks ago, which was a very thoughtful, carefully contrived document working with the MTA that complies with all of the requirements that the U.S. Department of Transportation said you have to comply with in order to be considered for a grant. They have a $1.2 billion fund. They're going to give it out. They plan to make the announcements around August 8th, plus or minus a few days. And they will go – they went from roughly 25 applicants to 9 finalists, which we're one. And then they will pick 5. Hopefully, we will be one of those. And then you get a grant, and you can use that for a demonstration project. The good news is you'd think they really want to give New York money, because this would be a chance to demonstrate to the country how congestion pricing works. If it works here, you can make it work any place. If we can get the technology to work here, anybody can do it. And that's what they're trying to do. That's the good news. The bad news, of course, is that there was a requirement that you have your application in with all approvals necessary by July 16th, which was last Monday. We did not have ours in time, although with all the approvals, but we had a plan. And the ways they give out money, there are all sorts of categories, and we were exactly in compliance. There's so much that has to go into buses, so much this, so much that, whatever. And the idea was, if we could get $500 million, which is a lot, big percentage of the $1.2 billion, but given the size of the city, it was not unreasonable. And they loved our plan. They went on and on about its most creative thing and really comprehensive and complied and all that sort of stuff. If we were to get the money, we could spend about $300 million of the $500 on quick improvements to mass transit. And then the $200 million left over would go to pay for the infrastructure, the cameras and computers and that sort of thing. And then we would, in about 18 months, start charging for people to come into the city. And hopefully it would encourage people to do two things. One, leave their cars at home. Or two, if they drive, don't go around and round and round through the Bronx and Brooklyn and Queens looking for one of the free bridges. Just take whatever's the most convenient bridge, whether it's tolled or not, isn't going to make any difference because it would be offset against your congestion pricing charges. So reduce the traffic in Brooklyn, Queens, and Bronx significantly because people would just go straight through. They wouldn't go all the side streets. It would reduce the number of cars in the city because fewer people would come in. There's an economic incentive not to. But let's assume none of that happened. You'd at least have a source of funds for mass transit, and all the monies that we get every year, which would be $300 or $400 million, in addition to the $300 million we'd spend up front on mass transit, every year you'd have $300 or $400 million profit, or whatever the term is, more revenue than expenses, and you'd use it for mass transit. And remember, 95% of the people that come into the city use mass transit. So they'd be big beneficiaries.
All right, but the feds want congestion pricing. So if the commission, and they have to report, I think, by January 31st, if I'm not mistaken,
I forget the date, it's March, right.
If they recommend non-congestion pricing,
you wouldn't get the money. I mean, if the feds do award us money, there will be
contingent on congestion pricing.
They just don't write your check. I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way. You know, people think that. They show up with this armored car. They open the back, and there's big stacks of $100 bills.
But there'll be no money unless there's congestion pricing.
If we are lucky enough to be awarded money on thereabouts August 8th, you will have to spend the money in compliance with their requirements and the plan, whatever things they are willing to fund. You don't have to take their money. They don't have to give it to you. Now, it would be very sad if on August 8th we wind up with nothing or a negligible amount because we didn't make the date. And we'll worry about that then. I've got to be optimistic, and I've got to negotiate the best deal I can as quickly as I can and keep plugging forward and, you know, never say never, never say die. Just, it's a democracy, and sometimes democracies work well and sometimes they don't, but whatever. We did come to an agreement. I want to thank the Assembly Speaker, Shelley Silver, thank the Majority Leader, Joe Bruno, thank the Governor, Elliot Spitzer, and all of their members, the Minority Leaders, Malcolm Smith and Jim Tedesco. And, you know, none of them voted for anything yet, and that we don't have that until March 31st.
Well, that was my next question. But does this deal representative of a tacit endorsement?
I want to be very careful. I cannot put words in the mouths of the leadership. I think what they would say is it is an opportunity to look at all the issues and satisfy the members with all of their questions. Keep in mind, we have for months either been briefing or offering to brief people. We've sent every Monday a memo to every Assembly member and senator explaining what we're doing. You can't institute systems by committee with lots of members. You see, if you want to take a look, we will this coming fall have an election in every borough, every election district in New York. I think it's a judge, something's up for minor things. It will be done with paper ballots. We have been unable to come to agreement and deal with technology that would go to the, you know, this is the year 2007, and we're going back to paper ballots.
A system, but it was rejected.
Technology is, you just don't do technology by committee. Everybody thinks they can. Everybody wants to have a say. Everybody says, I represent people. The whole idea of this original congestion pricing idea was we said, look, we'll use the best minds, which we did in putting together a plan. Then we'll use the best minds and the best companies to do it. And then let's try it for 3 years. It'll be a pilot program. And then come back to you, and you'll see what you like and see what you don't. because anything else is just impractical. You'll be here forever. And in the meantime, we're polluting the air that you and I and our children breathe. The congestion in the city is clearly slowing down economic activity, jobs for people, tax revenues. There's another fly in the ointment here, and that is that if you take a look at the MTA operating budget and capital budget, Lee Sander, that's a very competent guy. Spitzer gave him the job of running the MTA. He's going to have his hands full. There is just not enough money to expand the system, which people want. Lots of parts of the city don't have mass transit. To improve the system, doesn't work as well as you'd like it to or is comfortable. Make it go faster. It still takes a long time.
More comfortable, even stations rebuilt.
All of that stuff. The workers want to get paid more. It costs more for fuel. Every part of the system requires more money, and there's just not enough money. And one of the things about congestion pricing is it would be another source of revenue to do some of those things.
We're going to have to wait and see here. What scares me about this committee, and this is just my personal observation, is that there are so many fingers in the pie now that the key to this was the money's being taken and used exclusively for mass transit, that now there might be some siphoning off of congestion dollars.
Well, that's I think if that were to happen, I don't know if there's any pressure on that, incidentally. I think there's pressure. Oh, there are other things. How do you know that if you charge, it is going to have the effect is one question. The answer is you don't.
That's why you experiment.
You don't know. If any of the people that think about it those that have experience in the private sector would tell you, you don't know. You just got to go ahead. People keep saying, why can't government innovate? Why can't government get up to date with technology and everything? And you see a good example, because it's not something that is easily quantifiable. You don't know what's going to happen in advance, what it's going to look like, what it's going to cost, who's going to buy it, what color it's going to get painted, where it's going to arrive, when. I mean, and in government, you want the legislature's demand specificity. You show me that this is going to work before I spend one penny of taxpayer dollars. If that's what you really did, you'd be back in the Stone Ages. Fortunately, what happens at a federal, state, and city level, we do some things and then people yell and scream, and those things that work survive and those that don't get canceled, and that's the way you have to do this. That's the way the private sector works. But the next great... I'm less worried about the committee, partly because I think we'll be able to convince them that this is the only answer that really does reduce congestion. And the requirements of the committee is if they want to go in other directions, they have to show that it does the same thing.
Right. Okay.
The real issue is what happens on August 8th. If we don't get any money or get a trivial amount,
all
bets are off. You're starting from scratch. We're going to continue to pollute the air and strangle the city. And I don't know. We've got some other ideas. Plan YC has lots of ways to help the environment in this city, and we're going to work on all of those. But this is one of those that is much more controversial, but really necessary, not just for the air. I think if you take a look, 80% of the gas emissions into the city are from buildings and 20% from cars and trucks. So you say, wait a second, let's focus on buildings. We're going to do that. And that's some of the things. We don't need Albany for most of that. But the congestion is strangling the economy.
And that, conversely,
and not giving us the money for mass transit,
affects the rest of the state, because New York generates so much money for the
rest
of the
state. Keep saying that and saying that, and their eyes glaze over. Because what they can do is say, we'll take your money anyways if you don't have it.
Mr. Mayor, stick around. 1-800-848-WABC. 1-800-848-WABC. You get to ask the questions of Mayor Michael Bloomberg next. 77 WABC. All right, it's your turn here on the John Gambling Show to talk to Mayor Michael Bloomberg. You've got the questions, he'll have the answers. We're going to start with Nick here in Manhattan. Go ahead, Nick.
Yes, Mayor Bloomberg, I object to you using our tax dollars to promote your own personal anti-gun rights agenda. We should repeal every single gun control law we have, and we should be able to buy handguns over the counter in any store in the city. That's the way it used to be 100 years ago, and we had much less crime than we have now under your crazy gun control laws.
All right, Nick
I'm glad you feel that way. Number one, the good old days weren't the good old days. When it was the Wild West here, people killed people. and life expectancy was probably 20 or 30 years less than
horses.
It is today. Absolutely. Number two, we're not using public dollars. It's all been donated dollars. The creative as well as the advertising space on bus kiosks and radio, television, magazines, whatever. And number three, I think you really should stop and think seriously if you think that everybody should be packing heat in big cities. That would not be a great world for the rest of us. But the guns in the hands of criminals, if you have a loaded gun and you get illegal gun, you're going to do 3.5 years at a minimum, and the judge can sentence you to more than that. Guns equal prison. That's the message, and it should be.
All right, when does that start? Do you know when?
They're in the process of, very soon.
Okay, good. All right, Nick, thank you very much. Let's go to Joey in Brooklyn. Joey, you've got the mayor's ear. Go. Hello, Joey. No, okay, we're not going to have to skip Joey. Let's move along to Viviana. Viviana, you've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Hello, Mayor Mike.
Hi.
I am very much in favor of making sure that the air is clean to breathe. But when people have, day-to-day costs and they're living from paycheck to paycheck, I have two questions for you, sir. One is, will it be a overburden on those people to have to pay $40 a week to go in and out?
And what's the other question?
To that section.
Viviana,
second,
what's the other
question? Second question is, won't it also overburden the West Side Highway and the FDR because those same people are going to be locked into that area?
Okay. Viviana, I think it's fair to say that if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you probably, unfortunately, hopefully you'll be able to do better, but you can't afford to drive into the city, not with $3 gasoline, not with $30 or $40 a day parking charges in New York. If you are living paycheck to paycheck, the overwhelming percentage of those people take mass transit, and giving more mass transit and better mass transit to them is exactly what they need. And the only place we're going to get monies to do things like that is from congestion pricing or the taxpayer or raising the fares, which would hurt everybody. This really is a plan to take those who can afford to drive, which tend to be wealthier, and subsidize those who can't afford to drive. Although, let me tell you, there's a lot of wealthy people, including myself, that take mass transit every day. But 95% of the people that come into this city to work every day take mass transit, and I think it's fair to say there probably be very few that drive that are living paycheck to paycheck. There are some. Listen, everything you do is going to have an impact, but if we can get people to take mass transit, there'll be more fares, which will let the MTA improve mass transit. If we can have a congestion pricing charge, there'll be reasons to have less traffic. Less traffic means two things. It means cleaner air, and it also means more jobs and more tax revenues for the state and the city, because we're strangling this economy. You cannot get across town. You cannot get up and downtown. We just have to find a ways less traffic. And the only ways you're going to get less traffic is if you provide more mass transit. So it has to be something that gives you an incentive not to drive, but also gives you tax revenues or fees to improve mass
transit. What does the study say about the West Side Highway and the FDR?
Well, those two roads are chock-a-block full already anyways. It isn't going to get any worse. Those are exempted from the charge only because if you're coming from Staten Island, let's say, or Brooklyn or Queens, and you're going up to the Bronx, you want to be able to come and go those roads. But you don't get off those roads to go into the Central Business District now. You won't get off them then, so it shouldn't change the amount of traffic there. We will not charge on those roads under the plan, but it isn't going to make any difference to the number of cars.
As you got off at 34th Street, for example, on either one of those roads, the cameras would then
kick in. Absolutely. And hopefully fewer people. So if fewer people come into the central city, in theory, there'll be fewer people on the roads around the city, the West Side Highway and the FDR. There'll be fewer people on the BQE. There'll be fewer people on the Long Island Expressway and on Route 95 and on the Sawbrook, the Henry Hudson and the
First
Hutchinson.
Order of business is to get the money from Washington,
August 8th. And if we don't, it's going to be a very sad day for the city.
Have yourself a fine weekend.
You too. Great weather. Enjoy it. Don't go in the water without lifeguards.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg returns next Friday. Stay where you are. We've got lots more with Chris Wallace and you.
Opinion. Passion. This is the most listened to news talk radio station in the nation. News Talk Radio 77.